As it's written here, classical interaction cannot replace a quantum message. And what does it exactly mean, you will see in a couple of slides. So first of all, let me introduce the models. So models, models are, we're talking about communication. So models are consisting of communicating parties. Now, we'll be dealing with two-party communication protocols, meaning that there are two participants, Alice and Bob. And the game goes like that. In the very beginning, they receive their input. Alice receives X and Bob receives Y as input. Then Alice sends some message to Bob. Then Bob sends a message back to Alice. And then they continue the same way as long as they want, till some point Bob decides to stop, and I mean decides that's enough, and produces an answer. Okay. Now, of course, I said this is a game, so there must be some constraints which these guys are trying to satisfy. Constraints are the following. The problem, communication problem, is defined in terms of some relation P, which is formally just defined as a subset of set product. X times Y times Z, where X is a set of all possible inputs to Alice, Y is the set of all possible inputs to Bob, and Z is the set of all possible answers. And now their goal is, given X and Y, to produce such an answer, such as Z, which would lead to the triple X, Y, Z being an element of P. So in some sense, P says for every given pair X, comma, Y, those Zs are good, those are bad. And their goal is to produce one of the good candidates. Now, this is defined as a relation. As other alternative problem, I think about Z just being a function of X and Y. I mean, the desired answer of Z being a function of X and Y, which would mean for each pair X, comma, Y, there is a unique answer which is good. So this is not the case here. Here we have more freedom. It can be the case, and it will be the case, actually, that for many pairs, X, comma, Y, actually for, I think, all pairs in our case, the problem will depend later. For all pairs, X, comma, Y, there is more than one Z, which we are ready to accept as a good answer, as a correct answer. Yeah, good meaning correct. So meaning that if they produce something which does not satisfy the condition, we're saying that they produced wrong answer. And if condition satisfied, then answer is correct. Okay, so that model, it was because we allowed that sort of interaction between them, back and forth communication, that model is called multi-round model. This is first round, this is second, third, and so on. Now, there is another model which is called one-way communication, which is very similar with only, it's more restricting, yeah? And the difference is that there is no ongoing communication between them after Alice sends her message. So there's only one message allowed by this setting from Alice to Bob. So the game goes like that. Alice receives X, Bob receives Y. Alice sends a single, one and unique message to Bob, and that's it. After then, Bob has to produce an answer. So there is no real interaction between them, and no real, like communication. Well, there is a communication, but Bob cannot respond. So Bob was only a receiver. Bob, in this case, does not send anything to Alice. So this model is much more restricting. As before, problems will be formulated in the form of relations. Okay. So now, that's pretty much all the definitions which we will need. And as two big magnetic variations, variants of those models, you can think about quantum versus classical, naturally defined. Classical means that all the communication channels are classical. Quantum meaning that Alice and Bob, well, depending on model, only Alice or Alice and Bob, are allowed to send quantum messages. And in order to produce the answer, and actually in order to produce the next message based on all the previous messages, they are allowed to apply any quantum information. Okay, so two variations basically, quantum versus classical, and then we know it has Q staying for quantum, unrestricted interactive, R staying for classical, actually randomized, but everything will be randomized in our case. So we never require somebody to be explicitly deterministic, so randomness is always permitted even in classical case. So quantum classical, this is quantum one-way model where you have only one analysis to book both answers, and this is classical one-way.
What does it mean for zero error protocol?
Okay, now I'll say, So just simply, I wanted to tell you a couple of points about this thing. Now, what do we want to do in general? In general, we want to obtain results like that. We want to say that quantum is good. Okay, we want to show that somehow if we allow quantum communication, then we get savings. Now, as usual in the context of computer science, you don't usually care about polynomial settings. Okay, so we want super polynomial, but in all the cases I'll mention later, actually that was the case that the first obtained super polynomial separation was in fact exponential. So without loss of generality, exponential and super polynomial for the need of this talk are pretty much equivalent. Okay, so first result historically, now history. First result which has first separation of super polynomial or exponential source, which has been demonstrated for those models, is it was by Berman, Klein, and Wilkerson in 1998, and that was only for zero error protocols, which means that a protocol defined as before, but now both produces an answer. Okay, usually what requires answer must be good with high probability, let's say 9 or 10 or whatever, high constant. But in some cases, we can actually do more. We can say, okay, there are cases where a protocol fails. So we're not having an exact solution. We have a protocol which works. It is a probabilistic protocol. I'm talking now about classical case. It is a probabilistic protocol. It works not always. It works sometimes. But protocol itself knows whether its running was successful or not. Meaning that if after Alison Bob played the game, and now let's say it's Bob's turn to give the answer, Bob knows whether he has a good answer or not. And in the case the protocol failed, Bob says, sorry, I don't know. And whenever Bob gives you an answer, answer is correct. That's what we mean by zero error. So it's important to know that zero error does not mean exact, because by exact we usually mean that protocol is always correct. Okay, this is not what we require here. Zero error meaning that protocol always knows whether it's correct or not. Okay, so for zero error protocol, such a separation has been demonstrated for both models, one way and two way interaction. Now, for bounded error case, bounded error is more interesting. Why? Simply because it's less restricting. And I mean, protocols are even weak. Protocols which are weaker are still considered as good. And so we have much more, like, let's say, separations for bounded error, usually they are more difficult to obtain than separation for zero error, because somehow the restriction the protocol never gives a bad answer, a wrong answer. Sorry. Somehow the restriction almost always it simplifies a lot things, and this somehow puts a strong restriction of what can be done and what cannot be done. So bounded error, first separation has been shown by Raab in 1999, and that was only for interactive protocol, Q versus R. And then it remained for a couple of years open what is happening for bounded error case in Q1 versus R1, one-way quantum versus one-way classical. And then, as I remained open, so that is still open. Now, while that is open, there was another result for bounded error protocols by Berman, Cleveland, and Watchers and DeWolf in 2001, which separation has been shown for bounded error protocols for simultaneous protocols. I'm not going to tell you the details of what that means for protocol to be simultaneous, but it is just a version of one way, which is even more restrictive than one way. So it's even weaker setting. Okay, so somehow at this point it was sort of a funny situation because there was a bounded error separation for unrestricted interactives, there was a bounded error separation for simultaneous, which is the most restricted case, but it was still open and still remains open what is happening with one way with bounded error. And then in 2004, Barr, Yassef, Jaram, and Karamidis have shown that actually you can get exponential separation for one way, and they show the correlation. And I said in the beginning, this will also be the case for our topic today, that we are allowing relations to be our tool for separating, I mean, to be the problem, okay? We allow relational problems. Now, somehow, to obtain separations through functions is much more complicated issue, okay? And because, again, function is somehow more restricting and you can do less with them. Relations, give, if you are a prover for separation, so as a, you know, as a tool, our relations give much more freedoms than functions. So it was only shown for a relation in 2004, and later it was shown by Ken Pekarinidis, Raz, DeWolf, and myself, and actually, well, in the previous year, formerly 2007, that same result for a function. So bound error protocols, one-way communication, separation of things through a function. Okay, and so now what I'm going to show you is that probably, well, given all this history, probably you could guess, you know, what would be the next question. And let me, and this is actually the question, but let me just probably use Blackboard for a second and just to draw what we know up to this last result, prior to this last result. And so somehow we know that. We have Q1 versus R1. And we know that Q1 is bigger, stronger, whatever. So Q1 is stronger. And this is not the same thing for Q. Q versus R, we know that Q is stronger. So naturally, I think it's natural, we probably might try to get a sort of separation between these two guys. Q one-way versus classical two-way. First of all, let me say that it cannot be a separation. It can be some sort of, and it is actually, some sort of incomparability result. Because it's very easy to come up with a problem which is solvable in classical two-way. But, or let's say, very easy to solve in classical two-way, but it's very hard to solve in quantum one-way. If you just think about sending bits or some sort of indexing function, where, let's say, Bob knows x, and Alice knows I, which is coordinate, and okay, X is a vector of length n, I is integer from 1 to n, Alice knows X, and Bob knows I, and the goal is to produce the I's coordinate of X. So if it would be possible with a single message shorter than n bits, n qubits, to solve the problem for message from Alice, by message from Alice to Bob, that would violate information coding inequality, where we know that in order to send n bits, we need omega of n qubits. But if we have interactive classical interactive protocols, it's very simple because Bob can send to Alice the index, and now Alice knows exactly which one single bit is interesting, and then she can now send a bit to Bob and throw it out. So it's trivial to show that R can be stronger than Q one way. But the question is it true that, is it possible to find a problem which is solvable in quantum, well, one way, so by a single quantum message from Alice to Bob, but is hard for classical case, even for interactive protocols. And somehow it's not exactly true, but this protocol partially result. This result partially apply, implies some of the previous results, simply because if you get something here much harder than here, in particular, that means that you can find here something much harder than here, as well as that you can find something here much harder than here. So somehow this result it implies, just logically, straightforwardly, some of the previous results. It's not really true because some of the previous results which are related are done through function. And here, I show this only for a relation, which, as I said, sort of weaker result. So one of the open problems will be to get a similar separation for a function. Okay, but in some sense, well, let's say, idea of what I'm doing is I'm trying to come up with one single separation, which would logically imply some previous known separations. And of course, that would mean that it is stronger. So I want one separation, which implies some sort of three or other separations, like family of other separations. That was my one of the reasons why I got excited about this question. Well, of course, it's also interesting result, as it states, like, in my opinion, yeah, because it shows you really another, well, shows that these two models can compare the power, quantum one way versus classical two way. Okay, so let me define the problem. Problem is relational. And think about table of size n by n. Here, for demonstration, I use table of size 2 by 2. So this is n by n, n equals 2. Integers from 1 up to 2 times n squared are placed in the cells of this table. And the columns of this table are indexed with 1, 2, up to n. Now, so this is somehow underlying structure for the problem. Now, Alice's input consists of the elements of the last row. So Alice does not know what is exactly the table, what does it look like, but she knows the set of the elements in the bottom row. So in this case, it's 2, 4, 6, and 7. This is the input to Alice. Now, Bob's input consists of the elements of each column. In other words, Bob does not know what the table what the table looks like, but he knows that the first column consists of 1, 4, 5, and 7, and the second column consists of 2, 3, 6, and 8. Okay, now for answer, they're required to do the following. They have to output a column index. So in this case, for example, something else that would be 2. So they say that, well, column index is 2. And besides, they have to output. Now, it's a little bit complicated, but in a second, in 5 minutes, you'll see why it's defined that way. It's related to a quantum protocol, which we want to be able to use for computing it. So this is some function, well, something which is related to the content of this cell. So this cell is, again, this is the intersection of the bottom row and the column, which has been output by them. So column 2 has been chosen. Now, what is the relation? We interpret the two elements which are sitting in that cell as binary numbers. So in this case, it's 0010 equal to 2, and 0110 equal to 6. And you look at bitwise XOR of these two vectors, which is in this case 0100. And for that number, anything which is orthogonal in binary, in GF2 to log n vector space, so anything which is orthogonal to this vector would be a good output. So in this case, 2,1010 is a valid output for this problem. Okay? In some sense, this is sort of not very natural. Maybe it's not even a function, but some sort of, I don't know, witness of knowledge about the content of this cell, but this is what we can obtain intuitively, quantumly, and what we will not be able to obtain classically, so that's what we need for separation. But somehow think about it as some function of those, some evidence of knowledge of those two elements, and this is evidence. You can think about just, if we, instead of really computing this thing, just try to randomly guess and put some random vector here, binary vector, then the chances that you'll get a binary vector which is good is only 1/2. So in order to do this probability much higher than 1/2, you should have some non-trivial approach into it. Okay, and so in this case, 2,1010 is a good answer, as well as 2,0001 is another valid answer, simply because 0001 is also sorry, orthogonal to 0100. And it's, yeah.
Alice's input consists of only the
left-hand numbers. Alice knows that. Alice knows that. 2, 4, 6, and 7. She knows the content of the.
Okay, she knows the content of the last row, and Bob knows the
each column.
Each column of code, but not in any order.
Yes, exactly. So the table is somehow hidden. The table is for our convenience. The table is not known.
I see.
Okay.
So, wait a minute. I think this is the key slide.
Sure. So just let me show one more thing. So this is another valid answer. Just because instead of choosing column two, they can choose column 1, and then you have numbers 4 and 7, and then similarly, by same computation, the bitwise XOR of binary representations will be 0011, and then 0011 will be orthogonal to the number, itself orthogonal in this case. So 1,0011 is valid too. So these are three possible valid answers for this problem, for this input.
So will there be a unique cell that, you know, covers, I mean,
They say they for in the output they say which column has been chosen.
Okay.
They can choose any column.
Okay.
But once column is chosen, it determines the cell.
Okay. So it's kind of like a set intersection.
Yes.
Bob has this collection of sets.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Wants to know, is it that all of the sets have empty intersection with Alice's set except one of them, which has an intersection?
Well, this is a little bit different because in this case you have promised that all the intersections are of size 2. So what you should do, you should actually intuitively provide some evidence of knowledge of the content of one of the cells.
Okay, so they all have intersection of size 2. So
yeah, all have intersection of size 2. But wait, let me just be clear in the definitions in order to make it simpler. I am cheating a little bit. And during my talk, you know, the further it goes, the more cheating will come. Sorry for that. So this is a simplified version. And actually, for this specific version, I'm not sure that for this specific version I would be really able to give a lower bound. Because actually, my construction is a little bit randomized. So it's not really promised that it's related to your question. It's not really promised in the real case that each cell has two elements. Many cells will have two elements. Constant fraction of cells will have two elements, but the construction will be randomized. So it will not be exactly two elements in each cell, but this is the form, first of all, form I started to think about, and this is a form I think, well, you know, given my speaker's abilities, this is, I think, the optimum trade-off between being precise versus being understandable. You know, so, yeah, but, well, I hope it will give you the intuition of what's going on. Okay. Yeah, and please don't hesitate to stop me if you have any questions during this talk. I mean, I would really prefer that, right? Please stop. Okay. So, our statement is the following, as I already briefly mentioned. For that problem, we get a separation. So, the problem is solvable by a one-way quantum protocol of cost O of log n. And the problem requires omega tilde with tilde, meaning that we here we ignore logarithm factors. Omega of n to the power 1 over 8. Actually, I'm sorry, it should be actually 1 over 4, because n in this case is not the size of the table. It's, I define n as number of rows, number of columns. So in this case, it will be n to the power 1 over 4, but know that the input size will be n squared, because we have a table and Bob should receive elements of each row of the table. So Bob should receive somehow a list of 2 sentences per element. But well, it really doesn't matter. This is the idea. We have log n solution and we have n to the omega 1 for our bound.
What's the best classical upper bound?
Actually, this is it's surprising. I think I only lost quadratic factor here. So the better, probably the right one would be n to the power 1 over 4.
Which is the square root of the dimension of the table.
Which is the square root of the dimension of the table.
And that's going to be
birthday. Exactly. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and I think, well, I know pretty much where I'm moving, but in which stage. Okay, yeah. Okay, so now quantum one-way protocol, let me briefly convince you that it's solvable. Quantum one-way, again, back to the same example, I'll stick to this example during the talk. As first step, Alice sends to Bob the superposition of all the elements of the last row. Okay, so in this case, it's 2 plus 4 plus 6 plus 7. Now, Bob projects the state to the content of one of the columns. It's a little bit informal, but the idea is Bob has projective state, which is defined according to elements of the computational basis corresponding to each of the columns. So in this case, Bob has projection 2, 1 plus 4 plus 5 plus 7 versus 2 plus 3 plus 6 plus 8. As a result, Bob is somehow choosing, in this case it's green, a column. Which the choice does not depend on him, it's a random depending on the outcome of the measurement. But as a result, meaning in this case Bob. Bob is left with just superposition over only those remaining 2 elements which sit inside the intersection, okay? Because, like, think about it as, okay, this is what Alice sends. These are the possible outcomes for Bob. So somehow Bob projects what Alice says to one of the columns. As a result, Bob is left with just superposition over 2 elements sitting in the column. And Bob, of course, knows which column is that. No, Bob knows index of the column because that is the output of his projected measurement. Okay, and that is just a binary representation of what Bob has. Then Bob applies Hadamard transform. and measures the result on a special basis. Now, Hadamard transform will give him such a state. What is important is that here he has superposition over all j's in conventional basis game, over all j's which are orthogonal to the bitwise XOR or those to the vector. So this is exactly what we require. So Bobnov has superposition over good answers in some sense, and he measures she's left with one of possible j's, which can be with probability 1 over 8, I think, which can be okay, should be different. Anyways, should be fantastic. And that is one of the possible outputs of Bob's measurement. And so, with having performed the protocol, Bob gets such a pair and he's able to output this pair.
Sorry, why is this classically harder than just the problem where you have to output one of the numbers in the
detector? No, the same case that you knowledge of one of the numbers would not be sufficient. That's the key idea. Because it would be very easy classically to get, let's say, to know that 2 or 6, let's say, 6 belongs to the intersection of the bottom row and 2. How can that be done? Just Alice randomly picks one of the integers.
And then
exactly. And that was the second thing that. Intuitively, in order given that you know that set 6 belongs to that cell, now I have almost search problem to look for the other element within cell 6. And it turns out that you cannot do much better than that. Well, a little bit better can be using the curve. Not much. Okay, yes, so.
Is this the same problem that Richard suggested?
Well, it's modification. It's the same problem, yeah.
Can one see this as a generalization of the matching
problem? Well, intuitively, you know, the only thing which is possible, well, my intuition, no, I can tell you exactly what is my intuition, which okay, puts please. Those two things together, yeah. If you have superposition of two elements like that, in quantum case, you can do what's possible classically. Somehow, quantumly, exactly. So that is the idea. Same thing is happening with BJK problem. Somehow you get to indices and you can compare the signs of the indices. So this is the idea, because that's why I try not to emphasize too much this exact construction.
Right.
The idea is that it is possible using quantum mechanics to get some information about, let's say, correspondence between two numbers, which is impossible to get classically. And the same idea appears if you think about how you can solve black box problems just by using quantum Boolean instead of two. How can you, from Oracle, how can you learn with one quantum query XOR of two different entries in your Oracle and so on. This is exactly the same idea. And it's only one simple, well, it's not simple, it's very deep, but it's you can know due to Kolmogorov complexity of statements for sure. Ideas are simple. Having two quantum elements, you can do something which you cannot do having two quantum objects. You can do things which are impossible having two quantum objects of the same nature. This is the idea. Yes. So, So now let me give you some outline of why a classical solution is expensive. So, our approach will consist of several stages. So, what I will try to do, I will try to give you outline of the proof. Without giving you the overview of the proof in the beginning, so I'll show you several steps, and after that I'll try to conclude and just to overview all the steps together after, not before. So just try right now, probably just don't try to really get an overview of the proof, just try to follow each step. I think probably it would be easier for me to explain it that way. So the first step, I'm saying that instead of solving this problem, the original problem, we can require from a classical protocol to solve this problem. Now, this problem is as just defined. What is this problem? This problem is very similar to the original with the only difference. And the difference is that you have only one column. Bob has only one column. So Bob does not have the choice of having one of many possible columns from which he can output from which he can take the answer. He has takes the answer from only one column. So there's only one row given to Alice and elements of that row, and only one column given to Bob, elements of that column. Now, probably we will almost solvable even quantum. But in this case, it's important to not just say, talk about solvable, but to talk about how good can it be solved. So it turns out that quantumly can be solved with probability pretty much, well, it can be efficiently solved by shortcut of quantum protocol just shown before, with probability 1 over n. And let's intuitively think about this problem. So what can you do in order to solve it classically? You can artificially reconstruct that problem. Okay, and as a result of reconstruction from this problem, the original one, you will have n possible columns instead of one column. Then run the protocol which we have. Now, Bob knows which column the protocol gave, and with probability 1 over n, that protocol, that column will be the only good column according to what the guys want to solve now. Okay, so with probability 1 over n, you can reduce this problem to the original problem and get solution.
Whereas, you know, intuitively, you should only be able to solve the one on the right hand side of probability 1 over n squared.
Exactly. And classically, you can solve this problem unless you really send a lot of information. You can solve this probability pretty much 1 over n squared.
It's basically the
disjoint
problem.
It's basically the disjoint problem is two elements, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the proof reduction. And now we go to a critical point. Because as for the first reduction, what I said is pretty close to the truth. Okay, so it's I think possible to reconstruct from what I said the proof, or it's going to be a mental problem of 20 minutes. But what I'm going to say next is, well, again, given the speaker's abilities, I will not be able to do that. So instead of giving you hints or intuition of the proof, I will try only, and sorry for that, give you intuition of the intuition. So give you a hint of why I started to prove that statement, why I believe that the statement is correct. Okay, because really proofs are very different and very long and different and difficult. And so I think simply it would be impossible for me to cover them given the time and again given my abilities. So yeah, sorry for that. So the rest of the talk will be just hinting and intuition and cheating. Okay, so step two, the second reduction. Second reduction is something more, well, actually, this is technically at least the longest part of the proof. And, what I'm saying here is the following thing. Instead of asking classical protocol to give us that sort of witness of knowledge about the content of that cell, we can just ask the classical protocol to explicitly give us the element in the cell. So as we have seen, quantumly, and then that is intuition.
Sorry, what was the other version? I thought we were talking about the third version.
No, we were talking about the version where you have to output any vector with the protocol.
You can only succeed with probability like in half.
Right? Exactly, so we're talking about what
okay,
about
so
small.
So then what are we talking about, the one where you could succeed with probability 1 over n? What's that?
No. Okay. So here the thing, So here the thing is that suppose that you are in the following setting. You are saying, okay, you're allowed to say I don't know. But whenever you give an answer, you have to be correct with probability 1 over a million. Sorry, it was probability 1 minus 1 over a million.
Yeah, okay.
That is the second here. So that's what I mean. Again, I didn't want to explicitly go there because it's nothing but that is the idea.
Okay. So in other words, you might need to solve it with the 1 over n pi.
Yes, but originally that's not the case. I mean, original hardness state, the global hardness.
It's not the same.
Yes, but during the reduction, I change a little bit the framework. Yeah.
Right.
So I'm talking about being able to give a very good answer with relatively low probability, with probability 1 over n, to give an answer which is correct, probability 1 minus. Actually, my real error bound will be something like 1 over 10 to power 18, I think, or something. Very funny. But still constant. Anyways, let me continue. So now the second reduction is the following. Instead of that version where we just had to ask the protocol to give anything orthogonal to those two elements, we're asking the protocol to explicitly give us the content of the cell. And for quantum protocol, that would be completely different things. I mean, this problem, my guess is that, I mean, I don't have a proof because I didn't try to prove that. I mean, I don't did either. But my guess would be that quantumly, actually, I would say the difference, the real separation between quantum versus classical model is sitting in this reduction. Because this reduction is true for classical, and it would not be true for quantum. Because quantum, you can do something non-trivial, providing an evidence knowledge of two elements, but you cannot quantumly do something non-trivial for in order to find two elements.
This seems like the Galbraith-Levitt theorem or something. You have these hardcore sort of bits that you can have, and from them you want to reconstruct.
Yes, but here we have, in this case, we have much simpler tasks. Because we're talking about communication complexity, and here we don't have to be in black box setting. Here we can say a lot about what protocol can do. That is what simplifies. So in this case, because the problem is completely combinatorial.
Okay.
Now, let me say what is the intuition of this thing. The intuition is the following. Think about classical protocols. So classical protocols usually, unlike quantum protocols, classical protocols are understandable. Okay, so intuitively, what they do something understandable, reasonable, intuitive. Okay, so now think about what intuitively, what can you do if you want to find elements sitting in a cell? Well, not to find. You want to provide that sort of evidence that you know what the elements are. So what else but actually look inside the cell, what else would you be able to do? Okay, this is general intuition. Now, of course, it's not possible, to formalize this idea in very general terms. But it turns out that communication protocols, classical communication protocols, are kind of restricted objects. And it is possible to look a little bit inside classical protocols and see what can they do. So what happens is a sort of very funny but good for us, a relation. There are two cases. Think about protocol of cost k, which solves the problem. Okay? So there are two cases. One case is that k is big. And if k is big, we already done, because we want to show our ultimate goal is to show that k is large. So if k is large, we are done good. Now, assume the case small. If k is small, that means the protocol is short. If protocol is short, it has some very specific structure. We can talk about rectangles, combinatorial rectangles. It's not really that important now what the structure that it is, but it's very restricted structure. And then, given the fact that the structure of the protocol is very restricting, it happens that in order to provide something which corresponds to its requirements, protocol really has to learn pretty much specifically what are the elements sitting inside the cell. So somehow, in other words, if you want to construct a classical protocol which gives you evidence of knowledge without really learning what the elements are, protocol must be long. With long protocols, you can't do funny things, so the protocol would not reveal, it would only give you the answer, but looking from outside at the transcript of protocol, transcript means just recording of everything, all the message going back and forth, looking at the transcript, you would not be able to really learn who is sitting inside, but still the protocol would be successful. Okay, but with the short protocols, not possible. Short protocols are two restricted. And so short protocols have actually no other choice but to really pretty much find the two elements, and given the knowledge of the two elements, just to find such an evidence. And of course, if protocol finds the elements, and if you look at the transcript, from the transcript you can learn what the elements are, because protocol communicates through transcript. That is indeed.
And there's one over.
So, what is short here?
Sorry?
Like, how short is short here?
Sure. Okay. So short is pretty much what we want. Okay. Because what I'm saying is that more formally, if you have protocol of cost less than, let's say, 4√n. Okay. For k less than 4√n, what happens is that given good answer by the protocol, you can guess with probability pretty much. Okay. No. I just tell you even more. Actually, you can see it here. Okay. Given protocol of length k, you can guess probability 1 over k squared pretty much what is the intersection. Okay, so again, look at this in the following way. You have protocol between Alice and Bo. Okay, and protocol is k1. And now, after the execution of the protocol, Bob gives you some binary witness, which is witness for his knowledge of the content of the cell, but not the elements themselves. Now, if you look, it is a different color. If we look at the protocol and all the transcript of the protocol, then you can guess, given the transcript, you can guess, well, most probably, you know, the pair was 2,7. Maybe it was something different, but most probably it was 2,7. And the chances that this is really true are proportional to 1 over k squared. So for a short protocol, you have good chances to guess correctly. For long protocol, you have bad chances, but protocol is really long, and so you are done. Because you want to show the protocol is long.
And then 1 over k squared, do you think that's tight, or are you losing something
there? I think I'm losing here.
You think it should be 1 over k, or?
Well, it should be, in general case, 1 over k squared, but if you put additional restrictions, I think you should just consider additional structure. If you consider additional structure, then it should be 1 over k. That's probably the same. And also, it's not clear that you know here what I do. I just, given the transcript, I just come up with only possible guesses. That's it. Probably you can use some post-transcript, you know, and do better.
What do you mean post-transcript?
You have the transcript, you observe it, but now you can continue communication because you're simulated by players. Okay, so we can use some post-processing. Okay, this is just trivial, very trivial way to guess. There are many ways, I think. So you can probably do something like binary search. So I think here I'm losing, yeah. That is the place. Okay, so, but anyways, there is a statement. So from one by one version, which is just evidence, original evidence version, to search version, we can get a well, if there is a classical protocol of cost k which solves z, there is a classical protocol of singular cost of k which solves the problem of probability 1 over n over k squared. And something with logs. Okay? Okay, so now I'm going to stage 3. Everything I was going to say about this stage. Stage 3. Oh, and no, they're not everything. The proof is going to come out. Oh, that's everything.
Okay. Can you say like a word or two about just like just give some buzzwords? What goes into it?
Yes, yes. Well, yes. So basically, it's about, well, you know, I'm looking at this protocol as something about, well, I forget about really what's really that output. I say that it outputs something which somehow filters and only permits you one half of possible pairs. Because if you have such a reproducible protocol, only one half of possible pairs can be good. And then given any protocol which, and then I just showed in order to get a combinatorial rectangle, which very high entropy of possible intersection elements, in order to get a big rectangle, you should communicate a lot. Otherwise, the rectangle is small. Mm-hmm. So it's some sort of a very extended version of Rosenberg's lemma about how rectangles about how rectangle design rectangles can look like.
Because first class of all over bounds.
Exactly. So he showed that he showed that a big rectangle it cannot consist only of zeros. It must contain ones. That's what he says.
Right.
But what I also show that not only contains ones, but it contains ones which are pretty uniformly distributed. And that contradicts the assumptions that here I have had only one half of possible candidates in the rectangle. Because
so like it can't be biased in the direction of, you know,
exactly
some layer structure.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, it should be very biased. It cannot be very, very flat. You cannot get a very flat distribution for a big rectangle, you cannot get flat distribution of possible intersections unless there are lots of non-intersecting pairs in the rectangle. That is the state. Now, complexity of the search version, again, just intuition. So intuition is the following. First of all, we know that to solve the problem with constant probability, we need omega of n bits of communication. Well, in this case, n is just size of each set. Okay, it's not size of the table as before, actually. N is size of set of L's and says half of the size. It's linearly related to size of the set of L's, size of the set of Bob. Okay, so basically it's known, it's famous Dijonis problem pretty much, it's known that in order to solve it with constant probability, you cannot do anything better than just to, let's say, Alice just sends all her elements, all these four elements in this case, to Bob. So we cannot do something very sophisticated here. The best thing you can do is just send by one of the parties, the whole list by the party, and then the other party can compare the received list to what, let's say, Bob can compare what he has to what he received from Alice, and then he can see whether there is something intersected or not, or to find the element which belongs to the intersection. Okay, so basically the idea is that you cannot do better than just to send long lists of elements in this problem. Okay, now let's think about slightly different model of the problem. We are allowed, the given is, we are allowed only k bit of communication. Okay, so what is the best, the highest probability we can have to solve the problem? So first of all, let's think about, we just want to find one element of the intersection, okay? But we have only k bits allowed of communication. As before, the best thing you can do is just Alice to send, we let Alice, let's say, to send some sublist, because now she cannot send the whole list if k is less than n. Yeah, k is less than n. She just sends some part of her list to Bob, and then Bob can check whether that part of the list, which has been sent by Alice, contains any of his elements or not. And there, if there is at least one element, then, I mean, if there is some element which contains Bob in the message by Alice, and in the Bob's input, then he can output that element. So the probability that it happens is pretty much O of k over n. It's exactly the probability that subset of size k contains that one unique element. So it's k over n. But now we have actually back, we come back to our problem and we want to find two elements in the intersection. And for that, and the best probability is k over n squared. Because, okay, now again, Alice sends some list of length k, but now we are asking, well, the good coincidence for solving would be that the both elements belong to that short list of sub k of size k. Okay? So what's going on here is just think about long list of size n. Okay? Long list of size n. Out of those n elements, you choose randomly or whatever manner you want, some sublist of size k. Okay, so some elements get there. Not all of them, some elements. Others are not. Others are left outside. And you have two marked elements. Okay? This is marked element one, this is marked element two. So the chance that the first marked element belongs to k, if everything is randomly constructed, which is actually the best you can do, the probability that this element belongs to subset is k over n. And the probability that both elements belong to subset is k over n squared. That's the idea. So, okay, so this is the statement. Our probability to find the both elements are O of k over square n, k squared over n squared, where k is amount of the communication we have, length of the protocol. And now let me try to give you a little bit more global structure of what we have done. Well, another proof. Again, by the way, use the same lemma, same principle. This principle reappears, I think, three or four times in different contexts during my proof. It's pretty funny how this, actually the whole proof somehow is based on the fundamental idea that you cannot have big rectangle without intersections. That's the basic idea about disjointness, and it appears several times. So, okay, and this is another combinatorial proof. And now what I have, the first step was, if a protocol of cost k solves the original problem with small error, then another protocol of similar cost solves the one by one version with probability 1 over n with small error. Second step was, if a protocol of cost k, well, okay, if conclusion of step 1 holds, then another protocol of similar cost solves the search version of the problem with probability k squared times less than 1 over n. So 1 over n times k squared times 1 squared.
So, right, so you just equate them and you get k to
the yes, yes. So, and this must be n. Exactly. This must be O of k squared over n squared, and together it gives you this. But again, it should be 1 over 4. That's actually a mistake. In this notation, it should be 1 over 4, but if you think about n as input length, then it can be 1 over 8.
First statement,
okay, it's a little bit, if you think about this thing, this first step, this is very easy to prove. Simply because you can reduce, okay, assume that you can do better than that, then by parallel repeating several times, you get good solution for the joint contradiction or not. And this thing, actually, during this route, you know, just telling you the truth, it happened to me several times that I felt I'm at loss. You know, I don't know what to do next. This one was one of the times. And actually, the solution is the following. Assuming that you have protocol that does better than that, it's not possible to directly construct a solution for design. So that way doesn't work. But what is possible is just if you have protocol which does better, by combining, by running the protocol again several times, not to solve design, but get some sort of weakness for big empty rectangle. And again, as I said, it's very important to remember that we cannot have, in terms of disjointness, big empty rectangles. Okay? So if that would be contradicted, then you might, on high level, as a subroutine, run the better protocol many times, and that used as sort of witnessing for big empty rectangle. And then that would contradict the statement that there are no big empty rectangles possible. Okay? So because you have some sort of thing about the following idea, how can you run protocol in order to witness empty rectangles? It's the following idea. Yeah. So actually, the proof is this part, well, given the lemma by Rosenberg, it's not too long, it's not more than 5 pages. But idea that, I mean, it was tricky. I mean, it took me a while to I mean, I was like, yeah, at some point I decided that's it, I cannot do it. It took me some time to find it. So the idea is the following. Suppose you want, okay, you have black box P, okay, which receives two things, X and Y, two inputs, and it outputs two elements in the intersection. Okay, let's call them A, B. Okay. So, and this protocol works under some conditions, and we want to show the conditions cannot violate that statement. Now, how can you use this protocol in order to witness disjointness? You have two inputs, x and y, x prime, y prime. And you want to check whether x and y are disjoint or not. Okay, and we know that it is hard to have a protocol which says with some confidence they are disjoint. You can have protocol which says with some confidence they are not disjoint, that's good. But you cannot have protocol which is short and says with high confidence X and Y do not have common elements. That's impossible. Now think about the following approach. Instead of X prime, you have X prime together with some new element, I zero. Just you add one more element to X. You look at X as set, okay? So we add one more element to X. And instead of Y, you have Y prime union I zero. I zero is a new element. So now, suppose that you, I know, two new elements. Okay, I zero, I one. I one. Two new elements. I zero, comma, I one. Okay. So now what do you have? If X and Y were, if X prime and Y prime were disjoint, then these two guys will have exactly two common elements. If they were not disjoint, then these two guys have three common elements. Okay? Now run this protocol over these guys. This protocol gives you two elements, if it's successful, out of the intersection. If there are three elements, then the probability that you will get back two elements which you introduced is pretty much one over three. But if these guys were empty, then the probability that you get back the same elements is one, which means you get a relation between success probability of this protocol if intersections of size two versus success probability of intersections of size three. And then you continue. And you get such a relation up to, I think, intersection of size square root n. And then altogether it gives you quadratic depth. That's it. Actually, it works for any t. In the paper, I stated as a statement which might be probably interesting out of the scope of the result, and I stated for, actually it's true for any t less than I think and half or something. So we have, if you have intersection of size t, then our probability to find the intersection is k over n to the power of t.
So if you wanted to just lower bound for constant success probability, then it would be easy. Better, easier.
You for constant, you mean omega of n?
Yes. With omega of 1. Yeah, all right. Then just in either case.
the disjointness or this version of it.
Yes. So the only it's only becoming something paper complicated if you're bounding the amount of communication. Okay, now a few open questions. So first, obvious open question is it possible to find a functional problem that does a similar job, that requires exponentially more expensive protocols in classical two-way than quantum-one way? Now, another question, as I said at the beginning, I'm not really defining what is an autonomous protocol, but it is just more restricted in one way, okay? So is it possible to find problem, either functional or rational, which is easily solvable in simultaneous message protocol, quantum, but is hard for classical two-way? And generally speaking, this is what, as I said at the very beginning, this is the logical thing which we want to get. Yeah? Give a separation that would logically imply as many known results as possible. For example, okay, now we can think about simultaneous protocol with functions or versus, that would be as strong as possible to call for.
Maybe take your time. I mean, it's like you have this high dimensional hypercube of possible results. It's like each one is a stock paper, right? It just one by one, right?
Well, but that is the main idea. Okay.
So it's only applies to problems, though. And you're just
Well, you want to go, you know, what I'm saying is you don't want to jump where there's one, you don't want to jump steps in the part of the ordering, because that will decrease the number of stocks.
At some point, committee members will get the four.
and that's when you get the final result.
Well, no, it's possible. Due to that, I heard once, I said on some logic course, because it's impossible to prove consistency of logic, but maybe there's some clever mathematician to prove inconsistency and keeps producing, stock every year just from inconsistency. The same thing here, you have to prove the biggest super NP plus NP, for instance, and then take each paper, each year produce a paper. But don't you think it should be some sort of zero knowledge papers? You should hide the. But well, given, well, yeah, probably P is not equal to NP, then you're good, because then you can have zero proof. Yeah, if P equals NP, I don't know, it's my big car.
So as long as the other people don't know P equals NP.
Exactly. It's not a subset. Exactly. Yeah, you can assume people don't. Yeah, I think that should work. Yeah. Good way to go. Anyways, that's it. All I wanted to say. Thank you.
You have probably tried turning it into functional problems the same way as for hidden matching.
No, here it's even complicated to come up with reasonable candidate functional problem. I think it's pretty complicated. Because this is a problem is very close to something easily done. So if you add some sort of pattern, that's what we usually do. We get some pattern which says pretty much for each possible input, it gives you either pattern contains all good answers or it doesn't, pretty much as a question, as a functional version of a relational problem. Now, if you do it here, problem turns into easy one. So it's not very clear to me what sort of candidate you have in mind. I'm not saying it's not possible, because I really know so far I was so busy to write this part, because I really did not have enough time to think about other things. But I think it's not straightforward, even to come up with a candidate. I'm not saying it's hard, it's not straightforward. Maybe some coding might help, I don't know. Some noisy maybe variants.
More questions?
So Dima, all these results, all the separations in the function case have been for question.
Yes, all the separations in function.
Yeah.
Yes, that's not separation.
Since you've looked at this problem,
it's all separation for everything for total, that would imply everything. And I think that's
the
question.
Yeah. So what's the general opinion for total functions?
Well, many people believe that it's not strong enough to give as a tool. It's not strong enough to give separations in many cases.
I mean, what do you get this?
It's a tool.
Right, in a two-way case, there's a quadratic separation. In the one-way case, we have no separation.
Yeah.
You know, if you allow n states instead of pure states, you can get a vector of two separation.
As a tool for separation.
But is that, do people even hope that for compute functions, you can get rid of it?
I know some people who try. I know some people who try to. How do they go to the home? Okay, home. I know some people who tried thought about doing that for. I mean, showing that this is possible for a couple functions. I mean, I doubt that it's possible, but I know some serious people who thought about that.
And so when you say you doubt, so.
My personal opinion is I doubt that it's true.
But I'm
not talking about their approach, I'm talking about the statement. I doubt that for total function you can get such separation.
Yeah, so could you say something about why you think that, so what's there about the compute function that separation would not?
I don't have an
I mean, if you look at the analogy in party complexity, there we know that there's no exponential separation, and it seems like to get algorithms in the protocols in the communication setting is harder to get them in the query setting. You know, like proven lower bounds is also part of it.
But there's something about completeness versus partialness.
Yes. As one would expect. all of these things that give an exponential separation, you can see why they depend crucially on a promise.
Yeah, exactly. Probably you should think about it. I don't know how to express it, but I don't know. Topology of info space, something like the topology of info space, but what exactly, how to phrase it, I don't know. I mean, topologically, you cannot do it if you don't have calls, but I don't know how to formalize it. So that's what you use promise for. You need holes. Actually, you need some sort of. Usually, in the problem, when you have promise, the idea is that you have some sort of intuitively clear form of holes, intuitively clear meaning of distance, and then you want to make sure the two elements are either close or far apart. So you use promise just to free. Just to make it, instead of epsilon, to make the minimum distance bigger. So you use promise to increase the minimum possible distance, where distance is something intuitively clear. Now, I was once thinking about is it possible to topologically phrase what the distance. I don't know how, but it might be good approach, because actually, well, I think we discussed it with you. I think in general, it might be interesting to think about it, because the way actually topology is actually, it is analogous without epsilon. So it's analogous without distance, without limits. And that's intuitively what we need, because somehow, given a problem as defined from a sink, we see that, well, definition somehow corresponds to topological construction, And it's hard to say what we're going to understand by saying close or far, but we have that notion of pretty much of what is good and what is bad. So intuitively, it corresponds to me, at least, it looks like similar to the relation between analogous versus topology. But I don't know how to phrase it.
I mean, we do want a distance metric here, right? Because we care about the size of the gap and so on. So it's not like
Yes, but probably you might avoid having to explicitly specify what the distance is just by using some sort of topological reasoning instead of analytical reasoning.
I mean, if you want intuition, I would just look at the case of query complexity. There, it's very clear why you want promise and promise.
Yes, or even black box operations versus unconditional operations.
Any more questions? Well, thank the speaker again.
Thank you.